This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
And I'd like to start this podcast by saying that Shelby is a coward and refused to go see Joker Phalia Do.
That's my impression. That's a pretty good Joker laugh, I think.
I don't really want to do a Joker laugh currently because I think it would hurt the ears of the people around us. But he is like so loud in his laughing in this movie. It's it's like so abrasive whenever it happens. Yes. And luckily he doesn't do it as nearly as much in this one, but it's like, oh yeah, you can see where people on the bus are like, Creeper, get away from me.
Yeah, no, I couldn't be bothered. I'm sorry. I knew we might have to. Because I was like, okay, here it comes. But then it did so poorly that I was like, oh, well, let's talk about the one movie that's not doing poorly. So victory is mine.
Last week legitimately went down to her building, like, you know, power main, and shut off the power to an entire apartment complex in order to not record an episode and probably about the Joker.
Yeah, exactly. It was a long con. No, we missed last week because I was sick and my apartment betrayed me. But also, I'm still sick, but I'm rallying for the wild robot. So, you're welcome.
Well, I'm sorry you're still sick.
Thank you. If you hear me cough, it's really cute, really demure. So, just remember that.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of Joker's cough if I had to, you know.
Oh, does he have a famous cough?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which you know.
Well, I did want to ask. I did want to ask at the top here before we get into better things. Joker, you were excited in a way because of Lady Gaga. Yes. But I hear not even that was enough. She wasn't given enough by the shocking after the first one proved how well this man can handle female characters and perspectives that Lady Gaga did not even get enough in this meaty role. But do tell where it went wrong.
Yeah, it's yes, Lady Gaga is in it. She is great in what she is given. She's not necessarily given a ton, but it's also confusing what she thought she was given, because there's lots of scenes in the trailer or like behind in from the, like, you know, leaked set photos of costumes, of outfits, of scenes that aren't in the movie. And if you've been following along on TikTok, as they've like asked Lady Gaga how she feels about the show, or like just like looked at her reactions at things, it seems clear that her and Joaquin Phoenix, like, that the movie that is out now is not necessarily the version of the movie that they thought that they were making. So I wonder if there was a more substantial Lady Gaga plotline that got nixed at some point. But yeah, it's like, the first one, I think, like, neither of us liked, but it sort of had this, like, incel quality. It was very unsettling. It was very unpleasant to watch. It had, like, this tension of this, you know, really sort of diabolical person and, like, who knew what he was going to do at any given moment. And this one opens up pretty shortly after the events of the first one. The Joker is in a insane asylum. Like, sort of getting, like, roughed around by the guards, but also kind of not really. He ends up in a, like, music therapy class with Lady Gaga, which it's, and the everything about the jail, it's like all everybody has cigarettes, everybody has a lighter. At one point, the place gets set on fire, and it's sort of like, well, obviously, like, why are we giving all of these people, like, if they're in jail? Like, there's scenes where, like, people are just walking around, nobody has handcuffs. It's just like, what? But yeah, so the
when you're committed, it doesn't mean you wear handcuffs the whole time. Okay,
well, no, but like, if you're seeing if you're doing like an on TV like 60 minute style interview in the jail, it seems like that you would be handcuffed if you were in a room with only a journalist without a guard.
Right. And so it's like, lining up with the glass and that
yes, that
view of hospitals and prisons.
Yeah, very freewheeling sort of on what's going on there. And like the men prisoners, the women prisoners, like Joker killed 6 people. Lady Gaga admits herself to the place. It's like they're somehow allowed to have a lot of interactions together, even though they're in completely different, like, seems like security level wards. So the whole first half is like him just sort of lazing about in this hospital prison thing, like meeting Lady Gaga, them having some sort of like interactions. And there's like musical numbers that are sort of, it's like sometimes they're singing in the real world. Sometimes it's like that thing where they go like sort of sing a scene and then it comes back that like, oh no, that wasn't actually real. Like he was just sort of imagining it. And then sometimes they're full blown like visions, you know, that are like obviously not real, where they're like on a TV set or like dancing through a park or whatever. So that's the first half. And then the second half moves into just like a very, very boring courtroom drama where Joker's lawyer is trying to say that Joker has a split personality. And so the other side of the split personality did the killing, but he didn't. And it's just like very predictable for anybody who's ever seen any episode of like a Law and Order or a legal show. And then like maybe the last 10 minutes, 15 minutes are sort of startling in what's going on. But not in a way that is really interesting or has anything to do with the first part of the movie or like sort of goes anywhere. Like this big sort of action starts and then sort of gets cut off at the knees rather quickly. And then the ending of the movie is really weird. It's just like very, very bizarre in like just about in every single aspect. It's like, who made the decision to do this? Like none of this really makes sense for this movie in any way. But yeah, so it's not great and it's gotten ripped to shreds. I think it had like a lower cinema score than Madam Web. Like it's really been like dragged left, right, and center by everybody who's in it. So I unfortunately
kind of spits in the face of anyone who liked the first one unironically, which was very much like edgecore, like
it's like it's not for those people, but it's also not for like gay Lady Gaga fans who might you know be watching it, or people who like it's like I don't know which audience of the first one it's trying to appeal to, or if it's trying to appeal to like anybody else. Like it's almost like it's purposefully not trying to, like it's trying to like turn off everybody. I don't know. Cute. But yes.
So welcome to the club, everybody. I was turned off 2 years ago or whenever that horrible movie came out. Absolutely hated it.
Ugh. And apparently they're not making a third one, but I am sort of like, if we ever end up in some sort of DC multiverse where we have multiple Harley Quinns, I would love a scene that is somehow Lady Gaga and Margot Robbie's Harley Quinns interacting with each other, because they are like two very different characters.
That would be good. Yeah. Good time. So, well, doing better in theaters, doing better with critics and audiences and every metric across the board is the little animated movie that could, The Wild Robot.
Yes.
Starring Lupita Nyong'o.
And Pedro Pascal, randomly.
Pedro Pascal, yeah.
Which I did not identified during the movie.
Oh, really? Oh, him and Catherine O'Hara, immediate clock.
Well, he doesn't really have an accent though in this.
Pedro Pascal?
Like it's like he's doing like a slightly different voice than normal, I swear.
When does he have an accent? He's like, what are you referencing?
Like in regular life, he sort of has an accent. And then he kind of doesn't in this. Huh. Or if it is, it's like sort of different. I don't know.
Maybe you've seen him in like movies, whereas I've seen him mostly in interviews. So I feel like his voice was matching.
Interesting. I feel like I'm usually pretty good at like picking up it. Like I got the Catherine O'Hara thing like very quickly as well. But with him, yeah, I did not pick up on him at all. But anyways,
and Kit Connor, the internet's boyfriend. I don't know him at all, but everyone, he's having a moment.
I don't watch Heartstoppers. And I have not seen the new Romeo and Juliet yet on Broadway, although hopefully I will. He was the young Elton John in Rocketman, though. If you remember
that. But is that it? Is it? Because Heartstoppers is like relatively old. Like it's not brand new, but I feel like everyone's been like, oh, Kit Connor this year. But is it just the Romeo and Juliet leaked stuff?
Well, I think it's just the Heartstopper stuff.
Oh, was there a new season this year or something?
Yeah, maybe? I think the new season just came out, or it's like in, because that's a Netflix show. Yeah. And like, I think that new season like might have just dropped. October 3rd, it just came out.
I think that's why
that's happening. And then, yeah, he's also in Romeo and Juliet. Also, like, he was obviously like attractive in the first season of Heartstopper, but I think in the books he's supposed to be like more muscly kind of. And so in the first season, people online were like, oh, like he's not beefy enough or whatever for the role. Like he's supposed to be bigger. And so he's like put on a lot of muscle in the last couple of years. And so for the third season, like all of these pictures, you know, from the season are now coming out of him like shirtless and like just sort of massive.
I think
that is driving the internet insane a bit as well.
Frothing.
But he's only 20, so I'm sort of like, you know, I'm seeing these like 40-year-old people on Insta or Twitter, like gays, be like, yes! And I'm like, okay, everyone, like, let's calm down. This is getting a little weird. Like, I know he is muscly and like sort of has a hairy chest, I guess, now, but it's like, he is like basically a child.
Yeah, he's barely legal. Like, please. Right.
So,
important context, thank you.
Having a moment. That's what I'm here for, to give the gay context on something. Yeah. Also, Mark Hamill is in this movie. I'm like looking at the cast list now. Stephanie Shu. I mean, there's a lot of animals in the forest or of whatever, wherever this is. So
I think Stephanie Shu is the bad robot who like comes to pick her up.
Yes.
And then Mark Hamill, I think, is the bear.
Yes. And Bill Nighy is the old goose.
Good old goose. Classic Bill Nighy. Like a perfect cast.
I love Bill Nighy so much. Oh, I told you that I ate a whole dinner with Bill Nighy and at TIFF. That was my first year in Toronto.
Oh my gosh. Was it goose?
I was at a dinner with... No, we didn't eat goose. I think it was... It's at a steakhouse. So he was probably eating steak, although I always get the salmon. So maybe he got that too. But it was him, Emma Lou, the girl with the teeth from Sex Education, and and there were other people at our table, but then like I think everybody left to go see The Menu or The Fablemans or something that was big that year, and I didn't. So it was literally just like the three of us and maybe one other person sitting at the table for like 40 minutes chit chatting. It was lovely.
Oh my gosh, look at that! Very cool, yeah. Matt.
And I found best friends with Anna Wintour, famously. And maybe dating her, but maybe not. You know, a lot of speculation on the Bill Nighy and Wintour relationship.
Wow, yeah, he deserves better, but I don't know much about her, so I can't say that. But anyways, doesn't matter.
Anyways.
Wild Robot, you saw this at TIFF. Congratulations.
Yes.
Where it premiered this summer. Well, this fall.
Summer. Yes.
September.
Yeah, I think I was at the actual like premiere of this? I think I was. I had heard that it was good, you know, from sort of just like buzz of people who had seen it like in pre-screenings and stuff. And DreamWorks was really, really pushing it. And they invited me to the premiere, and I don't love animated movies, but I was like, okay, this is supposed to be good. And the animation looks really beautiful from the trailer. And I feel like in Toronto, sometimes it's like, if you're seeing 20 movies, you want a nice little variety in there. And I was like, okay, I'm not really seeing any other like kids movies or whatnot. So it might be nice to have this in the mix if I'm going to see, you know, like documentaries about the Palestinian war and, you know, other things going on. So, So I went and saw it, and yeah, like, such a lovely, cute little movie. Like, everybody was crying by the end of it. Like, just the animation's gorgeous. The story is really beautiful. But it's based on a book, which I have no interactions with. Is this, like, have you read this? Is this something that Penny has read or looked into?
No, I'm pretty sure it is a, like, chapter book.
Oh, but okay.
I've never read it.
Okay, interesting.
I've, like, I feel like I've seen it, like, I've heard of it, but I've never engaged with it.
Okay. Okay. So you have not encountered that. Well, yeah, so then when did you see it? Did Penny go with you, or did you see it by yourself?
Oh, yeah. No, so it was a family affair. We went, and it was a full theater. Every single human being on Earth, I think, in our vicinity was there that day. And it was really nice. I mean, Penny got a little bit nervous at parts because there's, like, especially at the beginning, there's, like, a thunderstorm and a bear chasing them and stuff. But by the end, she was all in. It was very sweet. Rob and I were, like, teary-eyed. Honestly, what was so wild about this movie is I got to, like, the first big moment, and I was like, oh my gosh, that went by so fast. Like, what a beautiful movie. I literally thought it was over when, after the I could use an assist moment. But then there's, like, two other plots that go down where they have to, like, survive winter, and that's a whole story. And then they have to survive this, like, retrieval attempt. And so there were, like, a lot of, like, multi stories and sort of, like, false ends and starts, which usually I feel like is a bad thing and, like, kind of takes the wind out of the sails of a story, or it feels like they never know when to end. But I think here it really, like, added to the layers so that by the end you were just destroyed significantly because you think the one gut punch is enough and then the hits just keep coming. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty a sniffly theater for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I am, like, very intrigued by the book because it does have sort of, like, an episodic nature to it. Mm-hmm. The movie does, but I think the structure of it does work really well because, yeah, you sort of get these three kind of distinct parts where it's, like, first it's sort of just Roz, the robot, and what's the goose's name? Bright Bill. And then you sort of have, yeah, the winter plot line, which is, like, all of the animals. And then you have sort of everybody coming together to take out this evil, bad robot.
Yeah. No, it was all, like, and I think it reminds me, like, we talk a lot about how Disney or Pixar is starting to feel pretty monotonous or, like, overdone, and you see the same sort of beats and the same sort of design. And so every time there's something refreshing, like last time I remember the Mitchell or Puss in Boots was a big one, mm-hmm. the Mitchells versus the Machines, like when, or obviously Into the Spider-Verse, when there's something that dares to, like, play with the medium, like, really have fun exploring how to animate something. I think that just elevates the story already. And then to have a really meaningful, beautiful, connectable story on top of it, then that's, like, immediately just above and beyond the sort of deluge of sequels and IP and spin-offs that we get, and we just, like, sit down and absorb. But this one kind of, like, is a shock to your system and, like, the quality of it, because the animation here is just absolutely gorgeous. And it was, they went to this sort of, like, hand-painted design that was it really, I mean, there's not really anything to compare it to. I think they were inspired by, like, the old Disney animated films like Bambi, and sort of that hand-painted look matched with the Miyazaki studio. And I think it just, like, really stands out as something really refreshing, and you're immediately put into this world, and really it's just stunning to, like, watch it play out.
Yeah, well, you can even see from the trailer that it's just a gorgeous, gorgeous movie. Yeah. I mean, I think they're helped sort of by the fact that it is all of these, like, natural landscapes. It's mostly, like, in mm-hmm. the woods or by the sea, or, yeah. you know, on a lake. Like, it's It's very like pretty natural settings, but they do a really gorgeous job with it. And just like the shot compositions and the way that, you know, they're depicting the trees and the animals and sort of like the symmetry of everything. Like there's a couple of shots of all of the animals like sleeping in the, like, I don't know, wigwam or whatever it is that they sort of build for each other. And it's like, those are all really beautiful. Like it's just gorgeously shot. So I think that, you know, with some of these Pixar movies or Disney movies recently, it's like, not only is the plot sort of bad, but everything looks kind of cheap and like they rushed it together. There's not like a prettiness to it. And this, like, yeah, the story is really great, but you also just have these gorgeous shots. So the entire time you're watching it, it's like, oh, this is really beautiful. And it's not, it's 102 minutes. So it's like, it's not a like short movie. It's not like 90 minutes, but it isn't long either. And I feel like the fact that it is pretty and then sort of like moves through these different acts really makes it feel like it's moving along at a nice clip. It doesn't feel like it overextended its welcome or is, you know, too much. Cause I also feel like sometimes these Pixar movies, it's like they're in like the 2 hour range. And it's like, we don't need this from a children's movie that doesn't really have that much plot.
You're getting complicated generational issues with like Frozen 2 and the magic system and like, or Afterlife. Like, I mean, and that's not to diminish, like, I honestly still think about how gorgeous like Soul was. Like there is a real artistry to the hyper realism that Pixar and Disney are really have been obsessed with since Finding Nemo probably. And like that skill, but it does just start to feel like, okay, we know you can do this. We know that's what we're going to expect. Like you can make water look really cool, but I think animation is all about like artistry and sort of the creativity and the way to play with that. And this movie in particular did interesting things where, it was playing with a different design, just like Paul Mitchell versus Machines, just like in Into the Spider-Verse. But they also were like using the art to add to the story. So like I was reading about it and the robot design is one of the... it's not like detailed with the hand painting that you get of all the other natural world. It's set up as CGI right at the bat. Like it's very, it looks kind of out of place. And that was intentional. And then as the movie goes on and as she's changed by this world and sort of like embraces it as her own, that's when her outer appearance becomes, has those same painted strokes that every other character has. And so you can tell that there's like real pride in using this type of art, not just to like prove a point and be like, wow, isn't this gorgeous? Like, look at what we can do, but really to kind of elevate the story it wanted to tell about connecting to this earth and to each other and finding this community and embracing like the beauty with the bad even. And I don't know, I think it was just like nice to see a project that was allowed to care about the details, because so much now it's headline after headline of like, oh, Inside Out 2, oh, Into the Spider-Verse 2, designers are working to the deadline. They have no time to study. They have no time to make it work. It's all stressful. They're being fired. They're being rehired. It's being outsourced. And it's like a really stressful time for creatives everywhere, but especially for animators. And so I think having a movie like this that like proves its thesis so well that creativity, when given space to be creative, is ultimately a better piece of art than something that's pushed through the sort of corporate mill so quickly. Well, but unfortunately, this is the last one that they're going to be doing in-house, so it might be the last one where they do have that sort of freedom to... or sort of creative control.
Wait, what do you mean it's the last one they're doing in-house? Like they're getting...
Well, outside. Yeah. So DreamWorks is moving to an outsourcing program. They're getting rid of their in-house design team, their in-house design firm. Like, so they're going to start outsourcing the different projects to different studios, not full projects. Like, so one studio in China will handle the design of this part of the film, and one studio over here in LA will handle that part. So it's just going to start it's a little bit of what Disney does. It's a little bit of what other animation studios do, but they just start to outsource it and it cuts costs down and lets them kind of, you know, you can find someone to do it cheaper. You have to have someone who will do it more fast. Like, it just ups the competitiveness, which does not help creativity, like, honestly. Mm-hmm. So that's disappointing. And this is like their swan song for DreamWorks as an in-house studio.
It is interesting, though, because it's like DreamWorks, I feel like, originally had some really gorgeous stuff. But if you think about things that they've had lately, yeah, it's like the Kung Fu Panda movies, Trolls. Like, I really like the Bad Guys and Puss in Boots, but I don't know how necessarily the beautiful animation was, like the Croods, the Captain Underpants movie, Boss Baby, like, yeah, not your highbrow selection.
No, not at all.
So yeah, this does sort of feel like a little bit of an outlier for them. Although they did do like the Prince of Egypt and Chicken Run and Shrek and stuff, which were obviously, yeah, groundbreaking movies back in the day. But yeah, interesting. I also really loved how this movie was is like a found family movie. Like, I always loved that genre as a whole, but this had a lot of interesting elements to that, because Bright Bill is sort of, you know, is like the runt of the litter and sort of like left for dead. So he's raised by the robot, but then there's also a fox that's involved. And then there's this, the possum mother and all of the babies. And it's just like such an interesting hodgepodge. And then eventually sort of like does get taken in by the other geese and they form a relationship. And then they all sort of have to fight together to, you know, defend against this evil robot at the end. So I thought that all of those elements like worked really well together. And there were a lot of really like heartwarming pieces in that. Also, something that was interesting that somebody was talking about as I was leaving the theater was how so many old Disney movies like dealt with death, you know, like a parent died, a sibling, you know, somebody dies in the movie, and how, yeah, in more recent animated movies they try to stay away from that. Like, a lot of the Pixar movies and stuff don't really deal with that subject, and obviously things like, you know, Kung Fu Panda and the Croods are not necessarily tackling that head on, but how this, well, like,
Kung Fu Panda is about him being adopted and finding his dad eventually. So,
but does someone die?
No, you don't see death on screen. You're right. I mean, of a parent or a family figure.
I'm like, I guess, but where there's a lot, where I feel like there's a lot of sort of like death scenes in this, or it comes up a lot, like sort of in a natural, yeah, landscape. Yeah. Like, even at one point you think one of the like possum babies has been killed, and then sort of later you find out that didn't happen, but it's like, oh, yeah, the, like, they're just sort of pretty willing to be like, oh, and yep, one of them got eaten, like, sorry. Yeah. Which I thought was an interesting choice for, like, you know, a movie that lots of kids are gonna go see, obviously.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, they cite Bambi as one of their like inspirations for the design mostly, but like Bambi is literally, I had to rewatch it recently, and it's the weirdest movie, and there's just constantly death and destruction. And you're just like, what was wrong with kids these days? Like, but there is something, you know, I think about growing up with Fox and the Hound, like every, there's like something that works, yeah, about the dark side of humanity being packaged in a little bit more of a understandable way. And I think that has been missing, because I mean, listen, I don't love animated movies, but like, I've been forced to sit through like Garfield, worst movie ever, Secret Life of Pets, like these movies that just don't do anything for me. And I'm like, ugh, like, what is this even? It's just poop jokes. It's just like lowbrow humor, just slapstick. And obviously that's always existed. Like, that's Mickey Mouse's brand right there. But it's nice to be reminded that like, there are people who take animated films as an opportunity to tell a multi-generational story. Like, it doesn't have to be just for kids, just humor for kids. And they trust kids to be able to take on like the more serious subjects. And I think those have been the movies that pay off, obviously, because it widens the audience quite a bit from people beyond those just trying to entertain children. And I think this was a nice vehicle to do it, to like wrestle with that question and like embrace that journey, because it is animals, and like that's an easy enough entry point for death, you know, like that's most kids' first encounter with death anyway, is like a pet or learning about like, oh, what do you mean we're eating chicken tonight, you know, like that sort of thing. So a little bit more easy to stomach maybe than watching a human parent get killed.
Yeah.
There's a movie that would approach that, but yeah.
The one thing that I'm sort of intrigued to see what happens with is, like, obviously Inside Out 2 came out earlier this summer and did so well at the box office. And I think Pixar sort of felt like, because it had done so well, that it had the Oscar wrapped up and in the bag. But I think that this movie is obviously going to be getting an Oscar nomination, and it's not a sequel, and I think it's a lot more beautiful than Inside Out 2. So I think that that is a really interesting now development of sort of like which of these movies is probably going to get the Oscar. There's also this stunning movie that I saw in TIFF called Flow that is it's Latvian, but there's no dialogue in the movie. And it's sort of about these different animals in a kind of like mythical, like future of some variety, but it also sort of looks like it's lots of like ruins and very like past like the world, but that's flooded. And so these animals kind of like end up on like a boat together, and it's sailing around, and was just like really, really good and really, really beautiful. And so I'm interested to see how that also factors into things, but yeah, it's like, oh, we actually have some like
a couple, right? Because they lost last year to the
To the Miyazaki movie.
Yeah, and then didn't they lose to Mitchell's versus the Machines? Or am I daydreaming?
I feel like the last movie that they won was maybe Soul. I'm like, let me.
Oh yeah, that's 2020.
Let me pull up the best animated features Wikipedia page and see what we've got going on.
Because you had Spider-Verse in there too. So yeah, I think this is going to be hard to beat just because, one, I think it is such, like, if it was a smaller film that not many people saw, maybe I would see Inside Out 2 winning. But since this is like widely received, I feel like it's easy to be like, okay, we all have to be honest with ourselves and admit this is better than Inside Out 2. Like, it just is.
Last year was The Boy and the Heron. And that beat Elemental. And then the year before that, the Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio won, and that beat Turning Red. And then Encanto did beat Mitchell's versus the Machines, but it also beat Luca. And so, yeah, then Soul was the last one that won, and that was in a pandemic year. Yeah, it looks like Frozen 2 wasn't even nominated for Oscar. I'm like, it's not on this list. So, it was terrible. It's truly one of the worst movies I've ever seen. But,
even the score of this, I was literally listening to it today. It's just so beautiful. It's the composer's first like animated film. I'm trying to remember his name because I want to be respectful. But it's just like, honestly, some of the most beautiful music I've heard in a movie recently. And
the composer is Chris Bowers.
Chris Bowers, thank you. So yeah, that alone. He did
Green Book. But he also did King Richard and The Color Purple. And some of Bridgerton.
Yes.
He did When They See Us. Clearly there's a, interesting. He's also, it looks like, a documentarian, because he's been nominated twice for an Oscar for Best Documentary Short Subject.
Oh, cute.
Fascinating. I'm like, interesting stuff going on here. He also worked on the Jay-Z Kanye West album Watch the Throne, which I do love, I have to say, even though I probably shouldn't be saying that. He also worked on The Haunted Mansion last year and also Origin. So a lot of different. Space Jam, a New Legacy. He did.
He's just getting his foot in the door. Okay. This is his moment. This is his breakthrough. Obviously he's done cool stuff before this. No disrespect. He scored Green Book, which unfortunately won a best. No. Won a best
picture.
Yeah, it did, right? I was like, wait, yes, was that the year of La La Land?
But no. Roma.
Yeah.
Oh, so La La Land, gosh,
that's ridiculous. That's horrifying to remember. Wow. Ruined my whole day. But I think the music here is really beautiful and just adds to the sweeping nature of it. And really, it just made me want to go hug a tree. And I think we need more movies like that. Because even as it like painted, I liked it because it kind of put nature at odds with like the brilliance of science to save us, which mm-hmm. it's like good that humans were saved, right? They're living in their little bubble worlds, able to survive, you know, all sorts of things with their magic robot army. And so it wasn't necessarily painting humanity as the villain. It was just showing these two worlds like existing next to each other. And I think it was making this sort of argument that, yeah, you know, all in all, you just want to find the people you need to get through life. But it wasn't like trying to be like Up or some, or not Up, Wall-E, where it's like,
oh, yeah.
Like, you know, it wasn't necessarily anti-technology, but it was more like, it was more concerned with just like, there's a beautiful world and we should celebrate it. And I really liked that. It was really nice to not have it be like too on the nose about something, you know,
mm-hmm.
aside from family, on which it was very on the nose, but very cute.
Yeah, no, it was really a lovely, beautiful movie. Another random animated thing that I learned this week that I wanted to get your take on is apparently Disney is not the only person doing live action remakes now. They are doing a live action remake of How to Train Your Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel about that?
I think it's stupid. I do. I think it's dumb. I think live action remakes offer nothing new. You know, it's like a remake in general, you know, 20 years down the line, sure, play with it. But when you're just copy pasting from one format to the other, it doesn't make sense to me. But yeah, I'm sure, like, maybe if they make it more of an edgy, like, grown-up version of like Vikings fighting with dragons, like, then sure, maybe. But if it's literally just like cutesy funny Vikings bopping each other on the head, I don't know. That being said, mm-hmm. I have a soft spot for Gerard Butler, so
yeah, and he is going to be in the
he's gonna be the one person who is coming back.
Yeah. Like,
I mean, when you think Viking, you think Gerard Butler, right?
I think plain when I think Gerard Butler, usually. But, you know, I guess to each their own.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing.
Which we saw when I came to visit you. So, and I'm coming to visit you again soon. So we'll have to figure out what we're seeing. And this time I'll be there at a better time because I'll be there at the beginning of December. So it's like,
we
might actually get to see some good stuff rather than.
Yeah, because usually you come in January and we're forced to watch Glass, like, honestly, and Plane. I think those have both been dumpy-wary situations.
Yeah.
But yeah, something to look forward to. But anyways, Wild Robot is really good and everyone should see it. I think I've had a few friends who are like, oh, well, is it for kids? And it's like, no, I think this is one of those that really, honestly, is just a beautiful time and fun and funny and cute and very, very, very tender.
Yeah, and I'm sort of like, what else exactly? I know that there's a lot of stuff that's coming out in theaters shortly, but I feel like right now the main stuff, it's like everybody's obviously seeing The Substance, and then there's, you know, Joker, But aside from that, I don't know if there's a lot of big stuff. So it's kind of like, well, you might as well see Wild Robot. Like, I do think it is the best thing that's kind of out right now. So.
Oh, well, here's a question for food for thought. My mom's visiting Laura and she's like, I can take her to see the Wild Robot or My Old Ass. So which one do you think?
I mean, I really love My Old Ass. And I do think that if you are like adults going to see a movie, that is a better movie. Also, I think that's a good mother-daughter movie. So I feel like if I was...
I mean, but this is literally a mother-child movie too.
I guess so. I also feel like when else is your mom going to see My Old Ass? I feel like that there is a lot of opportunities where she might get subjected to watch The Wild Robot with grandchildren of various kinds. So.
Right. You're good. You're very pragmatic. Thank you. What an easy solution. It's clean.
So I feel like I would see My Old Ass, but I think like you can't really, like you should ultimately see both of those movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well said.
This next week, we have really a Sophie's Choice of movie selections where we could either see A, Piece by Piece, the Lego Pharrell documentary, which I know you're excited about, or B, The Apprentice, the Sebastian Stan playing Donald Trump movie.
Why is that a thing? Like, how did that happen? Why?
I'll say this. I saw that in Toronto and was expecting to be annoyed and hate it, and actually thought it was kind of interesting. And thought that the performances were pretty good and that it was a, like, decently enjoyable watching experience. It's not about Donald Trump, like, currently. It's about him, like, his upbringing and sort of his relationship with this guy, Roy Cohen, who, like, worked for in the McCarthy administration and was, like, gay but not openly and was just, like, this horrible, horrible, horrible person and, like, ran and was super corrupt and, like, ran New York City and then eventually, like, died of AIDS, but they didn't – but, like, it was a Republican, so couldn't say that. So they said he died of liver cancer and everyone was like, I don't think that's true. So – but he sort of, like, taught Donald Trump all of his – like evil plays, according to this movie at least. So it is interesting to sort of see Donald Trump like trying to figure out who he is, where he's like not, where he's still kind of like dopey and like, you know, his parents are telling him what to do and he doesn't have a lot of money and he's trying to like flirt with Ivana. Like it is like that, it is an interesting sort of side of him, but I am kind of like, did we need this movie right now? But I think that the people who made it were hoping that it would somehow impact the election, which I don't necessarily think it's going to, but
yeah,
you know, every little bit helps, I guess.
Well, we'll see. I'll see how I feel.
There's also the new Saturday Night Live movie that's coming out that I think is finally doing wide release. So
worst case scenario for me personally.
There's that sequel to Wonder that's been like rolling around with Helen Mirren for like 3 years. That's like somehow about a concentration camp. I think that we've been watching
trailers for that for like 3 years.
Yes, no, I think that comes out like this week or last week. I'm like looking at the other things that are options. Yeah, this is a real bleak. There's a Josh Brolin, Peter Dinklage movie called Brothers that I've never heard of.
I might just get sick again. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Oh no, the power's out in my building again. Crazy. Yeah. You know, or we could do a full episode on Joker Filet Adieu. Just sitting there.
Oh, dear. Wow. Lots to think about. Thank you, Matt. Honestly, always a pleasure to see what I'm ensnared by next.
But luckily for your mom, she can go see My Old Ass or The Wild Robot. And so can listeners if they have not, because those are actually two good movies that you should be seeing. Well, this has been a lovely episode. We'll have to figure out what we're doing next week. Hopefully neither of us are sick. Both of us, like, film festivals are over. The buildings are operational and we can actually record episodes like normal.
That's the dream.
Okay, well, thanks everyone for listening and we will see you guys next week. Bye.